This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
An arsonist sets the Elks Lodge storage container on fire. College kids are stocking up on Four Loko they can.
Excellent.
And a $1 million lottery winner tries to sell her grandson for cash.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, take cover, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, November 12th, 2010. Surveillance video from a Gresham Elks Lodge caught a man smearing mud on the lens before setting a storage container on fire. About $10,000 worth of holiday decorations used for charity events were inside the container, along with flags to be used on Veterans Day, authorities say. The footage from Sunday showed a man approaching the camera after kneeling down in the dirt. He then took the dirt, climbed the fence, and smeared the dirt over the camera lens. Donald Green, trustee of the Gresham Elks Lodge, number 1805, said, "It just kind of blows my mind that someone would do that."
First of all, who picks on people at an Elks Lodge? Second of all, who picks on people in Gresham? Thirdly, who picks on people at a Gresham Elks Lodge? God has done enough to them. Leave them be.
And he didn't even light, the Elks Lodge on fire. He just let their storage container building.
What do you suppose the Elks Lodge is really storing?
Probably exactly what they said, holiday decorations
this
and
is
crap.
Tinsel from 1975?
Yeah.
All right.
And flags and fezzes.
Extra, cocktail napkins that have Andy Cap drawn on them.
Special tires for their tiny cars.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, that's the Shriners.
You're thinking of the Shriners.
Yeah. I just can't believe it, said Green. It's just terrible why somebody would do this. I just don't know what this guy's mindset was. In a few days that have passed since the fire, Green says the lodge has received donations from the community to replace the decorations. Anyone in for information about the case is asked to contact the Gresham Police.
Our irreplaceable collection of yellowed Hagar the Horrible strips has now been destroyed. Whatever shall we do? You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, November 12th, 2010. Coming up later on this hour, Science on the March. Also, entertainment news. If you want to get this program later on via iTunes, you can do that. You can also get it as an MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. It is also available on your mobile device at mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. This is Don Taylor.
Things have got to be a little bit awkward around the McCain household these days. As John McCain leads the charge against the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, his wife Cindy has just starred in a public service announcement advocating the opposite. Or as Jezebel's Iron Carmens puts it, here's a video of Cindy McCain essentially telling her husband to F off.
Awesome.
In this clip from the web video, she joins several celebrities in advocating its repeal.
Our political and religious leaders tell LGBT youth that they have no future. They can't serve our country openly.
McCain suggests the law emboldens bullies.
Our government treats the LGBT community like second-class citizens. Why shouldn't they?
Well, isn't that the same thing that, what is her name? What is Dick Cheney's wife's name? It's not
Cindy.
Mary Cheney. No.
Oh, not Cheney. Isn't it Mary?
That's the daughter. His daughter. Whatever. But Lynn Cheney.
Who wrote all the lesbian porn.
Yeah, so Lynn... What, really?
Yeah, she wrote a couple
so
of...
So easily distracted.
She wrote a couple of cheesy romance novels with, lesbian sex scenes in them. Which makes the fact that their daughter is lesbian and he's Cheney even more interesting.
It's like the fact that you, just waved, a shiny boob-shaped object at me.
Lesbian sex scenes? What?
I don't remember what I was talking about now. I don't remember where my car keys are. But she did the same thing. She made a video basically just telling her husband to get bent.
Yeah.
But that's the... I forget who made that observation, but it's like if you're just some virulently anti... there's no better way to guarantee that you will then just have a gay child. I mean, that's just God just, he just decides to amuse himself a little bit by giving your family some extra texture. So enjoy that.
In contrast to John, both Cindy and daughter Meghan McCain are outspoken gay rights advocates and opponents of Don't Ask, Don't Tell and Proposition 8, the California legislation that repealed the legalization of gay marriage. Last September, under pressure to address her father's views on the issue, Meghan tweeted, "I am a supporter of LGBT rights and I am against Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I fight every day. Until you are the daughter of a Republican senator, don't assume what I do and the stances I take are ever easy."
Also, she is hot as balls. We should
make
that observation.
And, I see her and I've seen her on The View and I just want her to just be an idiot and a horrible person. And you know something? She's kind of awesome. She's smart. She is gorgeous, but she's also smart. And I kind of actually sort of like her stance on, taking the conservative party back from the neocons.
Well, she's smarter than you expect her to be, but she's not. The thing that Meghan McCain needs to get together is the ability to speak in the soundbite, because she goes on like she was on Real Time with Bill Maher, and she just got, she really just got sliced and diced. Not because she's dumb as such, just because she doesn't really, it's a different format. And if you're going on there, they really play with live ammo on that show.
She's also really young.
Well, she just doesn't have a lot of experience on camera. She's not very savvy in terms of communicating in the mass media, but I mean, it's, but that's the thing. You give her a few years and a little bit of practice, some polish. She could be a player. It doesn't matter to me as long as she just keeps putting up those photos of her on Twitter where she was doing that. I don't remember what she was reading. It was that thing I told about how Nikki Sixx made very sure that everybody could see he was reading the Tibetan Book of the Dead on his coffee table or whatever. There was that photo of her on Twitter where she was just bending herself into the weirdest pretzel-like shape so she could get the maximum amount of cleavage possible while also being able to pose for the camera while also getting this shot in the background of something she was reading, and it seemed really, it was like some sort of a weighty thinky book that she was reading.
A weighty thinky book?
I didn't want to say tome and blah blah blah. So I just went weighty and thinky. Cancel each other out, or sound like some sort of a cartoon mouse duo that Dawn and I would voice. I'm weighty. I'm thinky, and then we would just
All right. The Washington Liquor Control Board has voted to put an emergency ban on energy drinks loaded with caffeine and alcohol, including the popular drink Four Loko, but the ban is prompting a rush in sales.
It's hard to say.
At Hamilton Market near Gonzaga University, college students rushed in Wednesday to buy up Four Loko before the ban goes into effect next week.
Done.
Joshua Hark, a student, the convenience store guy, said, "I would definitely say there will be some people trying to get as many as they can before they're gone." He said the store sold about 30 cases in the hours after Governor Gregoire announced the ban.
Well done.
The drink is a combination of caffeine and 12% alcohol. They keep saying one can has as much caffeine as 4 cups of coffee and the alcohol equivalent of 4 beers.
Okay, do we know how much caffeine and alcohol is that? I'm going to look it up right now.
That sounds a little bit better. They were saying before it was 4 cups of coffee and a 6-pack of beer, and I think, that sounds a little bit more
yesterday,
likely.
I can't remember if I told you this before the show or on the air, but I was at the Plaid Pantry buying whatever. I think I was buying Viso, so it's just a whole chemicalized nation we live in, which is fine. But I was at Plaid Pantry, and there was a guy buying, it was 5 cans of 4 Loko. I don't know whether they were just out And all he could get was five cans, if that was like they were maxed out or something. He's buying five cans of Four Loko, and then in addition to that, an actual six-pack of beer. So I don't know if it was like a sort of a, you know, it's like where Tom Sawyer had to trade in 10 yellow tickets for a red one or something. It's like, well, we don't have a Four Loko. I guess I'll just buy a six-pack and drink it. But he was buying a huge amount of it, and I'll guarantee that he probably never heard of it until the story came out. So, well done. All right, Four Loko. All right, let's see. Well, here we go. Hey, here, this is interesting. So I'm looking at the Wikipedia entry for it. Now, did you know that Four Loko is actually one of several different four named products made by this company?
I did not know this.
The drink is actually called Four, not Four Loko. Hmm. Four, so says Wikipedia. Four is a caffeinated alcoholic energy drink that uses malt liquor, Don Taylor, as its base and contains 12% alcohol by volume. It is produced by Fusion Projects LLC of Chicago, Illinois. The company also does business under the name Drink Four Brewing Company. The Four brand includes two varieties, Four Loko and Four Maxed. And by the way, that's Maxed, capital M, lowercase a, capital X, lowercase ed. Four debuted in the United States in 2005. First marketed, by the way, in Florida and California, where all the good things start. Let's see. So it does have 12% alcohol. It has 12% alcohol everywhere except in Ohio, by the way, where it has 12.5% alcohol. Because apparently you drink a little bit more there. There is no
good
actual...
Good for you, Ohio.
Well done. You set an example we can all aspire to. There's no actual listing, at least on the Wikipedia page, of how much caffeine is in this. But if they're saying it's 4 cups of coffee, that would actually have to be... Based on the assumption that most cups of coffee have 150 milligrams of caffeine, that would have to be 600 milligrams of coffee, which strikes me as implausible. Even Vizo, which really pushes the limit, only has 300.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, in any event. So there you go. I wonder if I can buy stock in this company. Seriously, if I could buy stock, it doesn't say whether it's a publicly traded company. No, it's an LLC, so it's not a publicly traded company, probably, which is too bad. Because that's where your money is. Did I tell you that my Philip Morris stock just continues to increase in value every day?
Well, yeah.
You know why? Two words. Third world.
Well, yes.
All right. The Vietnamese, they love cigarettes.
I was gonna say, and Asia. Yeah. Asia in general. The Japanese teenagers love the cigarettes.
They can't get enough of tobacco, Don. It's it's almost like they're physically incapable of stopping their cigarette consumption. Anyway. That sounded more evil than I intended just now. I'm sorry.
I've sent a photo to rickemerson.com to accompany this next story.
God, is it horrible?
It's hilarious.
All right.
So here we go. A Southeast Portland man is facing several criminal charges stemming from what police are calling a one-person crime spree last month in Milwaukee. Mark David Siebenmorgen, 46, is being held in Clackamas County Jail with bail set at $75,000. He was arraigned Wednesday in Clackamas County Circuit Court on charges of assault, menacing, harassment, and criminal mischief. Officer Uli Nietzsche, a Milwaukee police spokeswoman, said a man shoved another man to the ground without warning at a downtown Milwaukee bus mall on October 21st. 20 minutes later, a man was reported flailing his arms and flexing his muscles as he jumped on the hood of a car parked near St. John the Baptist Catholic Church at Southeast 25th and Washington, while the driver was behind the wheel. The man kicked and shattered the windshield before running away. At 10:26 p.m., a man burst from the bushes and confronted a woman behind Milwaukee Marketplace. As the woman walked away, the man threw rocks at her, striking her in the neck. Police used a tracking dog, but were unable to find the suspect. The following day, employees of the Safeway at Southeast 42nd and King Road called police to report unsettling comments made by a customer. Police then identified Siebenmorgen as the suspect and arrested him at his apartment.
So this is all the same guy?
This is all the same guy, and his mugshot is awesome.
All right, now, it has not shown up yet. If you want to...
We'll check to see if it actually, if it bounced back.
Yeah, if it didn't, and if it did for some reason, you can put it in the Dropbox, and I will...
Okay.
I'll stick it up there, and then I'll double check to see why that's not posting. But this is over the course of just a few days where he does all this, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah, one day, and then the next morning. Here's his, just for your edification.
Oh, wow.
There's his mugshot.
Okay, wow, 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 wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, yeah, we gotta get that posted. God damn, wow.
Yeah, so I'm gonna...
Wow, 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 wow.
Drop that over for you.
Wow. Okay, I can't quit saying wow.
No.
Jesus.
No, it's very much a wow sort of a thing.
Wow.
He's kind of awesome.
Okay, stop, Emerson. Just get a hold of yourself. Jesus, wow. Okay, stop. Seriously. All right, we're done.
Okay, that's in the Dropbox.
Christ. It freaked me out. All right, it's just, everybody just hold on to your petticoats. That'll be up just 1 second. I'll get that posted. So this sounds like an idiotic question. Did he have a record before this? I mean, he seems like he must be a known ne'er-do-well.
Yeah, police identified him after, like, the Safeway people.
I mean, like, oh, that guy.
Described him. They were probably like, oh, yeah. Stephen Morgan.
Old no teeth. Yeah, we know that guy.
Yeah, we know where he lives. We're just going to go get him.
All right, so there you go.
He shoved a guy to the ground, and then, like, 20 minutes later, was flailing his arms and flexing his muscles as he jumped up and down on the hood of a car while the driver was parked behind the wheel. Then he kicked in the windshield. Then an hour later, he burst out of the bushes at a woman and then threw rocks at her as she walked away.
The thing is, I'm looking at this guy here, and you were talking about a one-man crime wave, and I was like, well, oh, okay, I mean, what does that really mean? You look at this guy, this is the man. There is a man, one very strange man, who gives you a one-man crime wave, and that is Mark David Stephen Morgan. Is that
Stephen
his name?
Morgan.
You know what he looks like? He looks like what? Jesus Christ! I can't even talk while looking at this guy's photo. You go to rickemerson.com/pictures, and you go to the visual aids.
Yeah, he's missing all of his front teeth, and he's making a scary face to show off that he's missing his front teeth. He has the craziest eyes I've ever seen.
He looks like the media depiction of what they say Randy Quaid and his wife have been up to. You know? Like if Cousin Eddie were to go on some sort of, hey, Clark, I'm gonna take me on a 5-state killing spree. You want to come along? That's exactly what it looks like. If Randy Quaid's crazy cousin Eddie were to go nuts, he would be this guy.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, just go to rickemerson.com/pictures for visual aids for November 12th, 2010. Okay, I got to close that because it's freaking me out. It's like he's looking into my soul.
Yeah, he's...
Christ.
Yeah.
All right. God damn. All right, you were listening to Legion of News. I don't even know where we go from there.
Mm.
I got nothing.
I probably don't want to, like, lead into an ad with that because he's too scary.
Well, I can't even talk.
A DNA test is out showing a hair that was used to convict and execute a Texas man for murder didn't belong to him.
No, I'm stunned.
Claude Jones was put to death in 2000. Attorney Barry Scheck of the Innocence Project called on former President and then Governor George W. Bush to address the situation. A spokesman for the former president refused comment.
So this is a big, big deal.
Yes.
Because it's not just like they went around the guy's, you know, like through his cell or through his apartment or something and just found random hairs and just, well, let's test all these and see if one of them belongs to somebody else. This is actually I was watching a whole thing about this last night. This is actually one of the pieces of evidence that the prosecution kept like waving around going, and this hair, which belongs to him, is proof that let's kill him. And, you know, and of course, now he's dead. And we always knew that this would happen, right? Everybody knew that this day would come to pass eventually, where they would just test it and say, you know, and who knows? Maybe the guy's actually in it, so maybe he's not. But at least based on this, at least this piece of evidence, which was used to convict him, certainly seems to have come from somebody else because of what do you call that? Science. So this is all right. So this is the first Texas one.
Yes.
We've just got to admit when these mistakes are made if we have any hope of fixing the system.
By the way, do you think Barry Scheck has just got the weight of the O.J. karma around his neck? And he's just
I
got to free innocent guys till the end of time now. Like, that's just some sort of, like, he's just, like, got a Jacob Marley thing going on where he's just, like, weighed down with, like, O.J. memorabilia, you know, and he just has to, like, go from courthouse to courthouse freeing the wrongly convicted.
The Innocence Project thinks then-Governor George W. Bush wouldn't have denied a stay of execution had he known it was for the purpose of DNA testing.
He was blindsided and ill-served by his general counsel's office, who didn't even tell him why this stay was being sought.
I imagine that they probably deliberately don't tell him because they just want him out of the loop on those things so he can just...
Oh, yeah.
So it's plausible deniability. So you can go, well, I don't know what it was for. I mean, that probably is... You know, if you're the governor, you probably get told less than you ought to know because people want to make sure that you are insulated from the repercussions of your decisions.
Jones' son, Dwayne, says he's considering legal action.
Just let people go and get away with this scot-free is, in my opinion, unacceptable.
Jesus, he's way calmer than I would be.
Yeah.
It's, in his opinion, unacceptable. I mean, it does appear, at least at this juncture, as Jack Rebney would say, that, you know, that they, and I'm assuming it's lethal injection. Oh, who knows? It's Texas. I mean, they could have just stuck the guy in a blender for all we know, that they executed the guy based on, you know, incorrect evidence, which is, I mean, this is a horrible thing to say, but you know that that's the thing they've been waiting for, too. Like the Barry Sheck guys. I mean, I don't mean to be all David Gale about it, but I mean, that is clearly the moment that the Innocence Project guys have been on some horrible level kind of hoping for, where they go, aha, innocent guy, dead, George Bush, just so they can waggle it around, because that's what pro-death penalty folks always, that's what they always point. They go, well, we've never executed anybody innocent, which is because, of course, once you execute a guy, like, all attempts to prove his innocence, you know, are kind of pointless.
Well,
it's sort of moot for the general public. And so then it falls to people who have a lot of free time to do it, but people who have a lot of free time to do it typically don't know what the hell they're talking about. So then it falls. So you have to wait for a guy like Barry Sheck, who has free time and motivation and also knows what he's talking about and is, like, richer than God. And then not only do you have to meet those three criteria, but then you actually have to find a guy who was executed, and then you have to find a way to demonstrably prove a reasonable doubt, at least, after he's dead. So it's like 100 different things you've all got to do, which is nearly impossible, which is why it's taken so long. So, all right, well, we'll see what happens with that. By the way, I want to thank our good friend listener Jenny, who helped me to this fact that, because this has just fallen through the cracks in my mind. So it came out a couple days ago, speaking of this thing in Texas, sort of, that Jason Baldwin, Jesse Miskelly, and Damian Echols, who are the West Memphis Three, have been granted a new hearing and will possibly be granted a new trial. So you can find out more about that, because I know there's a lot of people in the audience that follow that. You can find out more about that at WM3.org. This, however, is Legion of News. You can hear this at mobile.cascadia.fm. You can get it as an MP3 download later on at legionofnews.com. You can also get it via iTunes. If you were listening to this program and you find it interesting, fascinating, amusing, edutaining, or any combination of the above, you can thank folks such as Castalia Language Center. They are a Spanish language teaching facility. It's just because I didn't want to say teachifying, and so I just went to teaching facility.
Teaching facility.
Turning into some turning into Barack Obama, apparently.
Folks go there to get the teaching.
That's right. There's a big sign on the door. Gone teaching. Sorry. Back next week. You can find out more about them at PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. They teach Spanish language classes to adults, which is, there's a couple of reasons. One, because, you know, with every year now, there's more and more kids who are learning Spanish earlier and earlier in school. The good news is, you know, there's stuff we talk about how, like, if you took high school Spanish or college Spanish, you might not have learned it all that well because they probably didn't have you actually learning it. They just had you memorizing it because so much of what happens in high schools now, especially, is based, is based on whether or not people can pass the end of the year skills test or the basic requirements test. And, you know, that's just not the way to learn how to speak something conversationally and colloquially. Fortunately, most kids are learning it a lot earlier. Now they're getting it in grade school in most states, which is good. If you didn't have that advantage, then you want to be able to learn it the way those kids are learning it now, because it's the right way. And that's to learn to speak it casually and, to speak it as though you were just, immersed in it in a conversational way. You can find out more about it at PortlandSpanish.com. They keep class sizes small, too, so you got no more than 8 people to a class, and they can find something that works with your schedule, and we'll find out what day of the week and what time of day works best for you, and they'll also have a class for whatever Spanish language skill you currently possess. Find out more about it at PortlandSpanish.com. That is Castalia Language Center. Here is Don Taylor.
It's time for science.
Here's your science. On the march. Every now and again, I should go back and look at the picture of this crime wave guy. It freaks me out all over again.
In addition to thousands of heavily armed police and troops, 6 goldfish will put their lives on the line to safeguard world leaders at this week's G20 summit in the South Korean capital. The Convention and Exhibition Center in southern Seoul, which is hosting the event, will use the fish to check the purity of the water supply to the restrooms. Oh Soo-young, PR manager at the center, said that they were just part of the inspection process. Animal rights activists criticized South Korea for placing goldfish in harm's way as part of elaborate security measures for the summit. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, claimed that goldfish suffer pain in much the same way as dogs and cats. Protecting world leaders is very serious, but so is protecting animals who feel pain just as people do, said PETA's Executive Vice President, Tracy Ryman. There are a variety of modern scientific methods that would better protect world leaders and keep fish from enduring agonizing deaths from contaminated water.
So they're doing what? Where are they putting the goldfish?
They're putting the goldfish in this recycling water thing for the center where the G20 summit is taking place.
So there's a theory the goldfish are dead, you probably don't want to drink it.
Exactly, and it's going, I guess, the water supply to the restrooms to wash hands and to things like that. I don't think it's the drinking water. I think it's the water that will, like, flush out the toilets and go through the faucets. But at the same time, they don't want anything that anybody could absorb through their skin, and so...
Doesn't it seem like goldfish just die? I mean, I never brought a goldfish home that wasn't dead like 5 seconds later for some reason. It just seems like they're an ill-designed fish.
Yeah, no, they're not a... But of course, you know, it's not like people really take very good care of goldfish. They'll put up these elaborate, you know, tanks for other kinds of fish and make sure the pH balance is all perfect and stuff like that. A goldfish, you know, you just stick it in a bowl with
a
tap water.
Mug. Yeah.
And you go, hey, it died! What the heck?
I had this goldfish that was like... It was just determined. I tried to reason with it, but it was determined to make a break for freedom, and so it kept leaping out of the tank.
Yeah.
And I kept saying, like, and I was like trying to lower the water level, and he would just find a way to, like, and just dive. You know, he was like a reverse Mark Spitz. He would just leap out of the, and I would go, like, dude, there's just carpet down there. You don't, all right, you know, whatever. And it's like, I would try to put like a little screen or something on top, and then, you know, eventually, no, it just came in, and it's like one crunchy goldfish on the carpet. I guess he would just had a whole thing where he just, you know.
He was suicidal.
He was well, or he just, you know, he wanted to taste the outside world or something before he perished.
Peruvian archaeologists have discovered 6 mummified dogs, all dating from the 15th century, and apparently presented as religious offerings at a major pre-Columbian site just south of Lima. The dogs have hair and complete teeth, said Jesus Holguin, an archaeologist at the museum in Pachacamac, located some 15 miles south of Lima. Holguin told the news on Wednesday that experts are still...
Told the news.
Well, it says AFP, and I was trying to figure out what that was. Associated Foreign Press, maybe? I don't know. Wednesday that experts were still trying to determine their breed. The mummified remains of 4 children were also found at the site. The mummified dogs were found 2 weeks ago wrapped in cloth and buried in one of the adobe brick pyramids. Archaeologists believe the animals were offerings related to a funeral, although we do not know if this was related to an important personality of the Inca period, said archaeologist Isabel Cornejo.
Some sort of prehistoric Leona Helmsley?
Perhaps. Yeah. The experts believe the dogs are neither hairless Peruvian dogs, an ancient native breed, nor sheep dogs found at grave sites in a certain culture, which flourished in southern Peru between the years 900 and 1350. Their strong teeth lead us to believe that they are domestic dogs that were used for hunting, they say. The next time you feel sick to your stomach or suffer from severe hay fever, relief may come from swallowing a worm instead of reaching for the medicine cabinet. Practitioners of biotherapy, the use of living animals to treat human ailments, say science is beginning to back up their anecdotal claims that maggots, leeches, and intestinal worms may be effective in the fight against everything from irritable bowel disease to allergies and psoriasis.
Who wants a bowel full of leeches?
Once you swallowed it, you're not really going to know it's there.
And I guess if you got like explosive diarrhea or something, it's all relative at that point anyway. What are a few maggots to the equation? I mean, you're disgusting regardless, you know?
These guys are meeting this week in Los Angeles for the International Conference on Biotherapy to compare notes and strategize how to overcome the high gross-out factor that many patients and doctors have.
Don't get my mom started on maggots.
Human parasites.
My mom is an honored citizen, as TriMet would call her. So she has a long time experience with the healthcare industry. And my mom is old enough to remember working in hospitals where they would have guys who come in with like some weird, like an infected wound or something. And like somebody'd go to the fridge and get the hospital maggots, you know. And it's like, and she would always tell the story like at dinner. It wasn't like she was trying to be horrible. It's just like she worked in healthcare for so long. It's like guys who are cops.
Yeah.
They just work in that industry for so long. They forget that those things are nauseating to like the rest of us. And so it's like, and again, it was always when I had like a friend over for dinner, and my mom would be like, "Did I tell you about the maggots we had that one time?" You know, and it was like, but that's one of those things. Like, there was this study that story that was on the Discovery Channel, like I don't know, maybe 6 months, a year ago, where there was something about some guy in Europe who was it was like a factual underpinning for the whole leeching thing, because leeches tend to suck from your body what is it's like the blood equivalent of heavy water. So it's blood that is heavier or closer to the surface because it contains a certain kind of impurity. And so he noted that in very special isolated circumstances, like giving a guy good leeching, exactly what the doctor ordered, literally speaking. Yeah. So.
And they're also finding that that there has been some, at least some anecdotal evidence, just some studies, that intestinal parasites, specific types of them, when deliberately introduced into the system, can help autoimmune diseases like Crohn's disease and stuff like that, where you have, like, say, irritable bowel syndrome. That they live in your intestines, and they actually provide vital nutrients that help your bowels.
He's your parasitic pal who's fun to be with.
Yeah.
All right.
Give him a little name. Apple fans scoffed when the press said it was an iPhone killer, but Google's smartphone operating system Android looks like it's living up to its hype. Research firm Gartner reported today that Android's share of the smartphone market grew by more than 600% in the last year.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything, and here's why. Coming from radio, let me just tell you this. When somebody puts figures in terms of percent, that means that they're trying to mask something. And I'm not saying this about, and this is not an anti-Android thing. If you have one person using your phone, and then you get two people using your phone, you've increased your market share by 100%. It doesn't mean anything. I'm not saying there aren't a lot of people using it, but I'm saying a percentage is misleading.
Well, in the third quarter of last year, Android accounted for just 3.5% of the market. This year, it's got 25.5% of the market, which puts it ahead of Apple, Microsoft, and BlackBerry.
See, but I dispute that because is this in America or is this worldwide?
I believe it's worldwide.
I just saw something yesterday that said that BlackBerry still had
a bar graph. You can't argue with a bar graph.
Can't I? Now, that's from Australia.
Well,
so do we know is that worldwide or is that just in Australia? The only reason I mention this is because I saw something yesterday that said that BlackBerry still had double the market of everybody else. And I say that as a non-BlackBerry user because I got the, I got the iPhone. But
I think you may have a point. I think, it says Gartner said Android's takeover was especially prominent in North America, in the heartland of Apple fandom.
Interesting.
The firm said in the third quarter of 2010, more than 20 million handsets running Android were sold worldwide.
It doesn't surprise me because they're cheaper. First, they are slightly cheaper. Second, never mind. That's already two Hitchhikers references this hour.
But Apple sold about 13.5 million iPhones, and Research in Motion sold about 12 million BlackBerries.
It really
is. So there are more Androids now out in the market.
It is interesting if you look at, there's a couple of charts you can look at side by side. There was, I think it was Technorati, one of those sites. It's so hard to keep track of. Do you find it difficult to remember, like, what tech or nerd-specific site you saw something on?
Yes.
And I always just default to saying, like, it was, like, Gizmodo or Wired, and it's, like, never, ever one of those sites. But it's, like, those are just the two that are the top of mind awareness.
And then you got the sites that do both tech news and, like, geeky fanboy news, like IO9.
Yeah.
And then it's like, and I don't know. I can never remember where I saw anything.
Or then it's
anymore.
Like somebody talks about seeing something on Gawker, and I have to think about, like, okay, what is Gawker? Is that because then I confuse it with Defamer. Doesn't really matter. But there were a couple charts side by side. See, now I want to know more about this. We should revisit this next hour. And again, it doesn't matter to me. I don't care what anybody uses. My wife has an Android. She seems to like it. Whatever. I mean, it is a game of inches at this point. I mean, the difference, it's not like there's worlds and worlds of difference between, between an iPhone and between a phone running Android and between, some of the BlackBerry phones. Like, you get, like, a BlackBerry Torch or something. I mean, BlackBerry's first, their whole first attempt at the touch phone was just, like, the worst thing. That BlackBerry Storm is one of the worst things I've ever used in my entire life. I used it for, like, a day. And I said, this is a terrible product, like, in every conceivable fashion. But BlackBerry learns from their mistakes. They are like a virus. They adapt pretty rapidly. And I think they still have a huge share of the business market. There was, though, on one of those sites, they did this great side-by-side infographic, which is the only way that in America we can ever process anything now because of years of reading USA Today, where we have to, like, see everything and, like, who's seeing unicorns? Don Taylor, 39%. Ronald Reagan, 12%. But they talked about the penetration into the marketplace by various smartphones, and then they had a separate graphic right next to it showing the percentage of profit in that industry and which company it went to. And it was like, in terms of penetration of the market, BlackBerry had like 35% of the market. And, like Apple had 30% of the market and Android had like 30% of the market and other was, like 10 or whatever. And then of the profits gained in that market, It was like Apple had 79% or something. Just some unbelievable, because they own the entire, it's vertical integration. They just own the entire thing. They own the phone, they own the software, they own the store, they own the whatever. So it is, I am really fascinated to see where this is all going to be in like 10 years. I am glad that I'm going to be here to see what the future looks like.
I'm sort of fascinated because now that, you know, I'm just in like week two or something of being an iPhone user and still in my honeymoon period, and they've launched that campaign for the Microsoft phone, whatever the new Microsoft product is, and the whole thing is like, do you hate people who just keep using their phone? Well, this phone is one where you can just like do something on it and stick it in your pocket and not look at it again. And I'm thinking, yeah, I just had that and got rid of it because it was, you know, just a phone. I'm doing stuff on my phone all the time. Now, granted, I try not to be a rude person who's on my phone while I'm talking to people, you know, just playing at things and texting and stuff while someone's trying to have a conversation with me. But at the same time, you know why I'm on my phone all the time? I love my phone.
Well, you know, the thing about a phone, no matter what phone you have now, so we were at dinner with my friend Trevor, a few nights ago, and we were talking about everybody, we were all sitting at the table talking about our phones and blah, 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 and whatever. But he actually made an observation. He really boiled it down to its bare essence. He just said, like, a phone is no... He said, it's a piece of hardware. Mm-hmm. It's like you were buying a piece of hardware, which is why people take it so seriously. I mean, the phone costs more than my first two cars. So, I mean, you know, that's why people get so invested in it.
And honestly, you know, the whole iPhone experience that Apple govs for you, just the way it's so tactile and it's so user friendly and it offers you so many different things. I've had dating relationships where I was less in love with the guy than I am with my iPhone.
You know, because I'm not that guy, I'm gonna skip the blah 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 vibrates blah blah blah. I'll let somebody else do that. That's for lesser minds. All right. Are we still in science here?
Let's do one more that's kind of science-related just to keep the music going. Facebook is hosting yet another invite-only press event on Monday, and TechCrunch's Jason Kincaid thinks he knows why. He says he believes they're going to unveil a Facebook email service. Last February, TechCrunch reported on Project Titian, a rumored Facebook webmail client that had already earned the office nickname Gmail Killer. Now TechCrunch speculates it's ready to go into limited release. Facebook has the world's most popular photos product, the most popular events product, and soon will have a very popular local deals product as well, Kincaid writes. It can tweak the design of its webmail client to display content from each of these in a seamless fashion.
All right, I'm an idiot. What do you mean they have the world's most popular photo client?
I think they own one of those, like, if not Photo Bucket, but one of those.
It's not Flickr, because Yahoo owns Flickr.
Yeah, I'm not sure which one they own. I don't know.
All right.
Business Insider's Henry Blodgett suggests the launch could have devastating effects on Gmail, not to mention AOL, Hotmail, and Yahoo webmail clients.
Just the AOL client, which we all use.
Well, it says, the mass exodus from AOL Mail has played a big role in the company's financial collapse in recent years, and Yahoo Mail has begun to see the same sort of erosion. Yeah. In related news, both CNN Money and Wall Street Journal reported this week about Google brain drain and the company's efforts to hang on to their talent as more staffers defect for Facebook or internet startups.
I got to say this. It's not like I really know what I'm talking about. So just take this with the take this with the salt mine that it calls for. But the problem with Google recently, it seems to me, is that Google's just doing that forgetting what made them famous thing, where they're augmenting stuff to the point that it no longer does what I want it to do the way I want it to do it. And I'm not the first person to make this observation, but the biggest example of that is the way that the Google image search now works. Because now, if you go to Google, there was this time, and I mean like a month ago, when you would go to look for something on Google, and you type in the, you know, whatever, you type in the...
boobies.
I don't know. Why? Yeah, it was boobs was the only word. Why is it that I can only think of the word boobs?
I could tell that you were trying not to say boobs. I could just tell.
Sorry.
Look
all right.
On your face.
You know, sofa.
you
type in the word sofa, and it would just, and it would bring up like 10 pages of results, and underneath each one, it would show the website, and it would show the size, you know, how many, like the pixel dimensions or whatever, and it would, you know, and maybe like a one sentence description of what the site was it was coming from. But now it does that thing if you search for something on Google Images, where it brings up every single result on the entire internet on one page, which means A, you have to wait like an hour for the thing to continue loading depending on what machine you're on. And also, if you want to find out any of the details, like where the photo is or how big it is, like if you're looking for a certain resolution of photo, you have to hover, or as my wife would say, hoover your mouse over the image and then wait for like the client-side server to kick up the information, which is just a huge drag. It's a pain because Google was really fast and simple, and they've like added a bunch of crap I don't want it to do.
Yeah, I've got this thing where I don't know if it's Google itself or if it's connected to the VO player, but I'll search something on Google now, and I'll put in what I want, and it will come up. And instead of getting the bar so I can refine my search at the top, I get something of like, here's all these video things you could get.
Yeah.
And I don't have the field anymore for the search anymore. It's gone. And it's like, if I misspelled something or I just want to tweak one word, I have to like refresh the page and go back and start over. And it's making me angry.
I actually have maybe this makes me an old person. I don't know. I have disabled that instant search thing on Google. You know, it's like where it has the, you know, it has like where you can
I don't mind that.
Filter your results and like, you know, with profanity or without, and then like with porn or without, and then instant search on or off, and I'm like off. So I turned that off. But then again, I am the same guy because I still use Yahoo Mail for something. And I am that guy that just continually has to press that button, like switch to classic Yahoo Mail. You know, like the kind that I want it the way it looked in 1997 when I started using it because I don't like things that are different.
No.
Is that the end of science?
That is the end of science.
All right.
Not like forever. It's just, you know.
It's not like the end of God
for
or something.
Now.
You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. We thank you for joining us today. Don't forget, coming up later on the Rick Emerson radio program, today we got your, it just says penis clergy. Penis watch and clergy watch, as well as your corpse watch. I like the idea of there being penis clergy.
Penis clergy.
You know, it's sort of like a very specialized form of the clericism. Penis Watch, Clergy Watch, Corpse Watch, your stupid criminal of the week. That is coming up, plus your top five and so forth. Oh, and plus, we're not going to have time to get to them here anyway, so I don't mean to sound like I'm just guaranteeing things, but we won't have time to do it, but I have three right here. These are all part and parcel of the same kind of theme. I have three incredibly disturbing stories. They're all disturbing in kind of the same way. Right here.
Okay.
They're all, let me just...
I can see them.
And let's see if I can just find... Okay, one of them, let me just tell you this. One of them contains the phrase, commenced to undress herself. And that's from the police report. Later on, it has the phrase, overwhelming stench.
Oh.
There you go. Now I got three of these stories. That's coming.
Do they all involve stench?
Yeah, maybe, maybe not. Oh. Yeah, you'll have to listen to find out, Don Taylor. Anyway, so that's coming up later on in the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemerson.com. Coming up, I don't know, 1:15 or so, a little bit. On the website, I think it says like 1 to 4 or something. And so we've kind of stretched it a bit at both ends because sometimes we go, like yesterday, I think we went till, I don't know, 4 or somewhat after 4 o'clock, 4:15, something
o'clock.
Like that. And we usually start around 1:15, 1:20 after a brief musical interlude, but that just seems like an awkward time to put up. We started 1:18, because then it's like we're Saudi Arabia or something, where it's like, you know, we're time on Mars. So after a brief musical interlude, we begin the Rick Emerson radio program. You can find out more about that at rickemerson.com. This is Legion of News, brought to you by, among other folks, Squires Electric. Find out more about them at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. Speaking of science and things that you may understand in some moderation, but not altogether, just speaking of the other thing about your phone, the reason that everybody is so attached to their phone is because it's that thing, it is the sort of thing where the sea level of everybody else's communicative ability has risen. So the reason I need a phone, because I didn't have a smartphone for the longest time, I got a BlackBerry. I mean, I had cell phones when they first came out. Like, I had the big brick phone, and I had the, whatever, those phones from Nokia, which, you know, while not massive, were basically like the size of a walkie-talkie or something. I mean, it was like the size of, like, a smallish cordless phone at your house. And then I didn't have a cell phone for several years. But then I got a BlackBerry again, I don't know, maybe in, like, 2002, 2003. And Laura asked me why I was doing it. I said, well, because everybody else has it. So I got to have it. It's like as everybody else's ability to be plugged in all the time rises, like you just, you know, you got to be dragged along. You just can't, or you're just going to be totally out of the loop. And so as a result, people have us because there's just so much going on. You just feel like you don't have as much free time as you used to. So, you know, maybe you're a guy who's real tech savvy and you really, you know how to take things apart and put them back together correctly. Without mangling yourself or your home in some fashion, but you probably don't have the time to do it. So use that magical phone device in your hand. You call this number. It's 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609, or go to SquiresElectric.com. You can get free estimates, and yeah, you're going to know, up front about how much it's going to cost you. They're going to be able to find a time that works for you to come to your house and make sure that whatever you have to do, whether it has to do with wires or wiring, whether it's repairing, whether it's tweaking or upgrading or installing or removing something, or just coming and just taking a look at the house and figuring out exactly how you can make your wiring work more efficiently, and how if you're putting in a home network or if you're adding on a room to your house, or maybe you're wiring a room that was just sort of a standalone attic before, they can do all that for you. And you know what? It's just going to work, and it's going to work at a reasonable, fair price. And they're not going to leave the place a mess. They're going to make sure that it's, it's absolutely tidy and flawless and perfect looking when they leave, and everything is going to function properly. 503.
Even if it wasn't tidy and flawless and perfect looking when they got there?
That's right.
Like, will they come, like, fix something for me and then clean my house?
And then give you a good shoulder kneading.
Oh,
503-252-1609. May not include a free shoulder kneading. 503-252-1609. Squires Electric. Here is Dawn Taylor.
We don't need the science news anymore.
But I love it so.
Fine. With Thanksgiving approaching, you can play that if you want.
No, it's fine.
It's a happy-ish song. Okay. Well, not really happy, but you know. With Thanksgiving approaching, frozen turkey prices hit a record high of $1.09 a pound this week, Bloomberg reports, a 28% increase from last November. Prices were pushed up by the escalating cost of corn, a turkey dietary staple, and farms raising fewer turkeys. The fundamental reason why you're seeing record high turkey prices is the fact we're seeing record high costs of raising turkeys, said food consultant Tom Elam. There's no turkey shortage yet, but last September, turkey meat stockpiles dropped by nearly one quarter.
Turkey meat stockpiles. That totally just sounds like some crap you just took out of I was going to say Pictionary, but that doesn't work either. I was going to say Bananagrams, then I was going to say Scrabble. It just sounds like refrigerator magnet poetry. Turkey meat stockpiles. Don't you just picture big warehouses, just huge piles of meat with sort of some Don Martin flies circling above them?
While many retailers don't release their turkey prices until closer to Thanksgiving, Bloomberg speculates that unlike last year, consumers won't be benefiting from discount turkeys this November. There'll be enough to go around, said Kelly Ziering, associate professor in the Department of Agricultural and Resource Economics at South Carolina State University in Raleigh. It might be that if you wait until the last minute, you might have fewer to choose from than you had last year. So you might want to consider chicken this holiday season.
I don't know when this ends.
Oh. Anytime. You could just fade it out.
There we go.
There we
Excellent.
Go. That was it. Yeah. That was nice. I enjoy the Thanksgiving. One thing we've talked about how...
Did you say the Thanksgiving?
The Thanksgiving. You don't really care much for Thanksgiving because you love Christmas and you want to just get right to it. My husband's company every year gives every employee a free turkey.
Like an actual full on, not like some pseudo, like a Cornish game hen sized turkey.
No, like a 15-pound turkey. And some years we get an extra turkey because,
because they fired someone.
Well, no, because Patrick, usually works with at least one young man in his early 20s who
has no
need for a turkey. So Patrick will bring home two turkeys. And then, because, there's that whole thing where at Thanksgiving that the grocery stores will lure you in. So if you buy all your groceries, like $50 worth of groceries, you get a free turkey. So then we'll do all our grocery shopping and get another turkey. So we'll have just turkey for weeks.
Do you have sufficient room to store these turkeys? Do you have a big deep freeze freezer?
No. We end up basically thawing them in the apartment now, particularly because I don't have a very big kitchen sink. So we discovered that we have to thaw it in the bathtub, under running water in the bathtub, because you always thaw things under running water. And I'll just cook them, one after the other.
Why do you always cook things thaw things under running water?
That's the most efficient way.
Oh, I guess that makes sense, because then it's not continually cooling the water that surrounds it.
It's a thermodynamic thing. If you put something in the fridge, it'll take forever to thaw. If you just leave it out at room temperature, it actually takes a fairly long time to thaw. But things, big solid chunks of stuff, thaw fairly quickly if you put them under continually drizzling running water.
No, that makes sense, because then it's sort of, because then it's not chilling the air around it, which then would be an insulator against warmer air,
I don't know what the physics is, but it works like a charm. And then we just basically, because again, we usually end up having to go to a family thing for Thanksgiving, so the turkeys are just ours. We don't like serve them to other people. We just have turkeys. So I end up just cooking them off and then usually slicing up meat and storing it in the freezer.
I got to tell you, I don't think in my life I have ever purchased, I don't think I don't think for Thanksgiving we've ever purchased a turkey. Mm. I think that is a slice of the American experience that I have not actually had myself. I've done that. Now we've done it at work, because we always do a Thanksgiving show, as we will be doing this year. And so somebody will bring, although for years it was like, because of Tim Riley, it was like tofurkey or corn, which is actually not bad. It's not quite
the same
experience.
Isn't it a fungus,
the corn? But so are mushrooms. Oh, okay. I mean, everything's a fungus. You're a fungus, probably. Your mom's a fungus. I'm just saying, it's a fungus. I mean, that's what, I guess, yeah. But I mean, it's all carbon. Who cares? But I've never done the thing of, being at home with a kiss the cook apron and, sticking the little things on the end of the turkey legs that, whatever those. What are those things that they're called that they put on the end of turkey legs?
I don't know. When they put them on lambs, I believe they call them panties. Or something.
Awkward.
I don't know what they are, but I don't know.
It's like on the cover of The Corrections. There's the smiling white people around the turkey, and it's got these little, freely, white puffy, little chef's hats.
They're little, booties
on the
for
end.
The
is it because the bone is considered unpleasant to
I
look
guess.
At, or
it's
you don't want to realize you're eating an animal?
It's supposed to make it look pretty or something. I don't know. I butterfly my turkey. Not butterfly, but I can't remember what it's called now. It's got some kind of
pupae.
Really weird word.
Zeppelin.
But you cut out
Oshkosh.
You cut out the backbone and then just flatten the turkey out and cook it flat, and it only takes 45 minutes to an hour to cook a whole turkey that way.
I did the a couple years ago for the first time. We did the deep frying thing, which was actually not bad. It was because turkeys, it's really dry and whatever. But the deep frying of the turkey, I don't know how you feel about that, but it was actually quite good.
It's the same thing when you flatten the turkey and cook it that way. It cooks quickly enough and evenly. Enough that your breast meat doesn't dry out.
Yeah, because otherwise it just becomes like the Mojave in your mouth, mm-hmm. Two or three bites in, you're just, because all kinds of unpleasant. here is Dawn Taylor.
Okay, here's a food-related story.
I've decided this is your food news bed for tonight.
Maori brand Gorgonzola cheese sold by Costco wholesale stores in Colorado is being recalled because potentially deadly E. coli bacteria has been found in the product. That's not cheerful at all. A statement by DPI Specialty Foods of Tualatin says the recalled cheese is packaged in clear plastic in approximately 1-pound wedges. The package carries a white sticker that reads, distributed by DPI Specialty Foods, Tualatin, Oregon, Italy, 34449, with sell-by dates of 1-13-11 or 1-14-11. The distributor says the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has not received any reports of illnesses, and that testing will indicate whether this bacterial strain is linked to illnesses.
Everyone's too weak to get to the phone.
The Gorgonzola. It was the Gorgonzola.
It's hard to see the keypad, the dial correctly when you're vomiting blood.
A Woodburn man has been charged with attempted murder after he allegedly fired a handgun in his home during a dispute with his wife. Police say 46-year-old Dennis Pierce fired the handgun on Thursday afternoon, leading authorities from several agencies to surround the house. Pierce's wife fled the home and was uninjured. The Statesman Journal reports Pierce was charged with attempted murder, unlawful use of a weapon, domestic violence, and pointing a firearm at another person. It's interesting that you get charged with both attempted murder and pointing a firearm at another person. It seems like one would take care of the other.
Like one obviates the other.
Yeah. His bail is set at $42,500.
By the way, we want to take this moment to, I don't know if I've read this email or not. I don't think I did. This is from listener Tony. Rick Dude says, I just wanted to let you know that I booked an estimate with CJ's High Climbing Services just now, says listener Tony. By the way, you can find out more about them by going to cjshighclimbing.com. You can go to cjshighclimbing.com. We'll also give you the phone number here in just one moment. But Tony's email continues. Wanted to let you know that I just booked an estimate with CJ's. Now I spoke with Katie, who was just as nice as can be, says Tony. Nice as pie, one might say. I was sure to let her know the reason I called them was because they were advertising in the show. Katie was excited to get the feedback. And he says, anyway, I look forward to living the rest of my life with the full use of my arms and legs due to the fact that CJ's will be doing the high climbing ladder work at my home. Best show ever. Tony, P.S., don't be a dick about the McRib thing.
That's...
I shouldn't have read
Thank
that part.
Thank you, Tony.
I should have excised that part before
Thank
I
you, Tony.
Before I reference back to this. CJ's High Climbing Services, you can reach them at cjshighclimbing.com or 503-228-9278. 503-228-9278. So we've actually, we've talked about Sean, Bo, Lauren, Gary, but we can add Katie as well, who apparently is just as sweet and pleasant as efficient as you can possibly imagine. So
nice as pie.
That's right. You can call them at 503-228-9278 or cjshighclimbing.com. Here is Don Taylor.
In 2008, Patty Bigby of Missouri purchased a $1 million lottery ticket at a North St. Louis County quick stop. 2 years later, authorities say the 45-year-old grandmother had blown through her winnings and was desperate for cash. So last week in Florida, she allegedly tried to sell her grandson for $30,000 after first asking $75,000 for the 11-week-old baby. Bigby has a criminal history. She was convicted of passing bad checks in Ohio in the 1990s. In 2007, she was released from prison in Michigan after serving an 8-year sentence for armed robbery. She lived in St. Louis for only a brief time before taking her $1 million lottery winning and moving to Florida. That's where she became reconnected to her 22-year-old daughter, Stephanie Bigby Fleming, who'd just given birth to the baby and was also in need of money. According to reports, grandma and mother hatched a plan to sell the baby to another of Bigby's daughters, 26-year-old Daniel Skyver, whom she'd recently reconnected with on Facebook.
Oh, awesome.
Bigby allegedly told Skyver she and her mother couldn't afford to care for the baby. Would Skyver want to adopt the child for $75,000?
It's like some dollar store version of a V.C. Andrews plot.
Once money became involved, Skyver said she had to alert authorities. She said she, too, had been sold by Bigby when she was still a baby.
I can't even keep track of this now. This is like tracking Aragorn's family history.
Well, apparently this woman, she reconnected with her biological mother on Facebook, and the biological mother, Bigby, told her, "I have this baby I can't take care of. Do you want to buy it?" And so she said, "I'm going to go to the authorities." And now she says she had also been sold by this woman when she was a baby.
The daughter had also been sold?
Yes.
Does it say to whom?
I don't know, but it says Bigby often blackmailed her adoptive parents for additional money by threatening to ask for the child back.
Oh, wow.
Authorities further allege that Bigby was also trying to rip off her daughter, Bigby Fleming, who thought that her baby was being sold for $10,000, $9,000 of which she'd get for the purchase of a car.
Wait a minute. How much was the baby actually being sold for? This is...
She was trying to sell it for... First, she tried $75,000, then she tried $30,000. She said she'd settle for $30,000.
But she claimed she was selling the baby for $10,000.
Right, and was going to give, like, $9,000 of it to the daughter.
All right.
Instead, Bigby allegedly planned to sell the baby for much more and keep most of the proceeds. Bigby and her boyfriend were arrested in a Best Buy parking lot last week in Daytona Beach, where they met Skyver to accept a check for the baby.
Is it? Please tell me there's a photo of her.
Yeah.
Is she a handsome woman?
Now, keep in mind, it says she's 45.
Wow. Those eyes are unnerving. Also her everything. I mean, Jesus.
She looks 60.
Seriously, look deep into those eyes, and then look at the weird wrinkling in the corners of her mouth, and then look at her hair.
Yeah,
she's got like this weird, like mongoloid haircut going on. First of all,
she's an angry, unpleasant person with crazy eyes.
But the thing is, who impregnates her? That's my question.
Oh,
who's the guy that just says, you know what, I want to put my penis inside?
Is
that woman? Boy, that little filly. She just put a strain on my ticker like nobody's business. You know, and I can't. Did I mention this story I got coming up next hour with the unbearable stench?
Yeah, you did.
That's the Rick Emerson radio program, which is going to be the home, not of the stench itself, I suppose, but of the story regarding same. That's coming up next hour at rickemerson.com for the absurdly, laughably, unbelievably, mind-breakingly low price of just 32 cents a day. Incidentally, this guy says, I'm 25 and F instant search. It's not about age. So there you go. Thank you.
Is that a text box person?
Yes. Hmm. Also, by the way, Gawker, Defamer, IO9, Gizmodo, and Lifehacker are all the same company. So that I guess makes sense why I confuse a lot of them. They used to have consumerist too. Let's do one more here, and then we will bring the curtain down on today's episode.
Speaking of which, for the second time this week, Google Maps have been blamed for nearly sparking an international incident after wrongly moving the border between Costa Rica and Nicaragua, motivating Nicaraguan troops to reclaim land that was never theirs. Google's done it again, misattributing an islet off the northern coast of Africa, first to Morocco and then to Spain. Who actually owns it is long been a point of dispute, Both countries claim it's rightfully theirs and flirted with war over the question in 2002. Google first identified the problem in July, and spokesmen say they're busy relabeling the islet as a contested territory. It's our mistake, and we're working to resolve it.
That
the engineer called the Associated
Press. Fantastic. I mean, it's like a... Don't you just sense that like a wag the dog 2 thing is imminent? You know, where Google's going to be like some guy, some engineer's going to bump a mouse or spill coffee in something, and it'll rejigger the lines between two countries, and then suddenly just nuclear warfare breaks out.
All of a sudden, holy crap, England actually owns India again.
And then, you know, and then you just see troops massing at the border and mustard gas being unleashed everywhere. I love living now. And the thing is, and we'll be, you know, and you'll be able to, you know, you'll be able to track it live. You'll be able to watch it from Google Earth. You'll actually be able to watch the apocalypse unfold. It's a good time
to
be us.
Maybe that's their plan.
Oh, and then
is they're setting all this stuff up, and then we'll all be just glued to Google Earth as we watch the anarchy.
I'm telling you, it's just the most glorious time to be us. There's never been a better time to be us,
except
for tomorrow. So tomorrow being Saturday, we won't be here. So you know, we'll be us, but you all won't get to hear the glory of it. Monday though, you can listen to that. We're gonna be back Monday at noon for another exciting installment of Legion of News. Don't forget, you can get this program later on today via iTunes. You can also get it as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or LegionOfNews.com. Legion of News comes to you live each and every weekday at noon from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff is Cheryl Kenakoa. The Rick Emerson Show comes up next at RickEmerson.com. Thank you for listening. Be safe. Have a satisfying weekend. We will see you Monday at noon for another episode of Legion of News.